Here they come, spinning out of the turn. Secretariat now by 5 lengths. Michael in second, Iron Maid a third. They're coming to the eighth pole. Secretariat by 5 lengths. They pass the eighth pole of the mile, 1:35. Secretariat all by himself. America's Super Horse, Ron Kirkcott up. 50 yards to come. Secretariat by 7. Secretariat 8 lengths. And Michael, Iron Maid is third.
Welcome to Equisport Radio, your VIP pass to the world of horse racing.
Down the stretch they come, cast thieves digging in at the rail.
Les Salzman, take you inside the gate, behind the scenes, to the heart of horse racing. Equisport Radio. Get tied on.
Hey, good morning, guys. This is Les Salzman, and welcome to the show. We've got an interesting show today, subject that people don't often talk about, and that's the auctions. And we've got three people from the inside. Tommy Biederman, who is doing double duty this week. He's going to be calling the Facing Tipton 2-year-old in training sale at Gulfstream on Wednesday night, and then he wheels right back on Thursday and does the Winter Equestrian Festival sport horse sale on Thursday. We're going to talk about that transition. Then we've got Mark Webster, who's the managing director of English & Sons Auction House in Australia. They're the Australian equivalent of our Keeneland. And then rounding out the show is the guy I've known for over 30 years, Todd Wojciechowski from OBS. He's their sales manager. And they've got their primetime sale, their March sale, coming up as well in a couple of weeks. And we're going to talk about that and some of the things that the folks over at OBS have been doing. They've done some renovations and really moving their program forward into becoming a national powerhouse, both on the two-year-old scale and the yearling scale. So a lot of stuff today. We're going to be covering all kinds of things with these guys. Normally, we'd have our good buddy Scott Miller with us, but Scott is over at Sunshine Meadows where they're digging out from a torrential rainstorm that we had on Wednesday. I was over there yesterday, and, you know, typical horsemen, the track at Palm Beach Downs and Sunshine Meadows, which are the two facilities that Scott's involved with, perfect for training. The only problem is electricity, internet, and stuff like that wasn't working. We'll be back there broadcasting from the finish line next Friday, I promise you. Coming up right now, after this break, we've got Tommy Biederman. So let's take a quick break, and we'll join you back in a couple of seconds.
OBS March, the two-year-old source for three-year-old stakes winners. Ella Reeves stamped himself as a leading Kentucky Derby contender with a pair of dominant graded stakes victories. Favorable outcome was a determined winner of the Grade 3 Swell Stakes, and Iliad was a convincing winner of the Grade 2 San Vicente. Find your next stakes winner at the OBS Selected 2-Year-Old Sale March 14th and 15th. The under-tax shows are March 9th through 11th. OBS, we measure success by performance.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years?
Gulch is right there! Gulch emerging with the lead! Play the King! It's Gulch! Play the King! Here's the wire! And Gulch has won it!
Come visit Gulch and all the champions at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or Saratoga. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
87 will be next. Consigned by Niall Brennan, stables as agent. A bay colt by Uncle Mo out of Seeking Gabrielle. This colt by the champion Uncle Mo. Just has 2-year-olds this year. This colt out of a forestry mare. There's a winner. This is just her first foal. Big family here. Family of Sahara Sky, grade one winner and millionaire. And here's a colt by the champion Uncle Mo that breezed in at 10-2.
325, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75, 75 now, 75. Josh, one more time now, 75, 75, 75. Woody, you're out. 400. 375 is here. Four. I got 75. We took a 400. Here we took a there to the man. We took a 400. At 400 now. 400 right there. 400. Now 25 on the dough. I got four down. 25. We took a 5 to bear. 425. 425. I'm at 400. Now 25. About to get 10. 410. Here we took a now 25. 25. 25. At 25, you get 25. Now 25. Here we took a there to the man. We took a 25. We took a 25. We took a 25. We took a 25. I got 400,000 right over here on Josh all day long. 400 right there. Asking 425. The board's right now. The board's right. 400. 425. That's 400. That's 25. 425. Yeah, 425. 425 and I have right over here. 400,000. That'll be Josh. Thank you.
And that was Nyquist going through the ring at the Facing Tipton 2-year-old in training sale a couple of years ago. That sale is always exciting. One of the guys that's going to be in the auction box on Wednesday night is Tom Biederman. Tom, how are you? And welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Our pleasure. And you're still up in Kentucky, am I correct?
I'm still in Kentucky, and I enjoyed listening to that auction chant by my associate Danny Green. Danny is the lead auctioneer at Fasig Tipton, and he was the guy lucky enough to sell Nyquist. He was also the guy lucky enough to sell American Pharoah a couple of years ago, so I'm after him now.
Well, and you've sold a bunch of good horses over the years as well.
Well, I've been fortunate to sell some very nice horses. Yes, I have. It's a matter of timing when you're in the auction stand.
who sticks out in your mind as one of the big horses that you've sold?
Well, actually, the first big horse I ever sold, and we didn't know he was a big horse at the time, I was working for Ocala Breeders Sales many, many years ago, and I was in the stand when Silver Charm went through the ring. So that was a nice one, and the first one. Of course, we didn't know how nice he was until a couple of years later. He brought $100,000 at the time.
And look what he did at the racetrack, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Tom, you've been with Facing Tipton now for how many years? It's got to be close to 25 years, right?
I would 35 years or so. I started in college running the tickets after someone signed them. They didn't even trust me to get the tickets signed. So I moved up from there, and it's been a great experience, and I've been a really blessed to be a part of that team.
You know, I'm going to embarrass you here a little bit. About 30 years ago, I was over at Ralph Rettler's house in Maryland, and Ralph had a cassette that you had sent him, and he said to me, this boy is going to be a good auctioneer. And I remember that because you've got a little bit different style than a lot of the other guys.
I do have a little bit of a different style. Ralph Rettler and Laddie Dance and Steve Dance were the guys that had the Maryland-style chant. And then I've sort of followed Walt Robertson into business, a family friend who was an auctioneer at Fasig Tipton. And my style was a little after Walt. But I also worked and was very fortunate to work with Ryan Mahan, who was the head auctioneer at Keeneland, OBS, and Barrett's. I worked for Ryan for 10 or 12, maybe 15 years. So I like to think that I've got a little of all of them in me. I'm not sure how much of the Ralph and Laddie I have left, but I was mostly a Kentucky-style auctioneer.
Yeah, and I've noticed, and when we were kind of chatting on email, you know, one of the things I've noticed about you over the years is you really work hard, whether it's a good horse or an inexpensive horse. You know, and that's one of the things I've admired about your work over the years.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's one of the things that I'm most proud of. And I'll tell you, there's two reasons that I do that. Number one, I have been and am a breeder of a very, very small scale, two or three mares here and there. So I know what it takes, and I know the sweat and blood and tears that it takes to get a yearling or any horse to the auction ring. And to only have 2 minutes of the attention of the auctioneer while you're in the ring, you have to make most of every second. And I try to be enthusiastic, whether I'm selling a $3 million horse or trying to get a bid on a horse that may be a no bid if I don't sell it. And so that is very important to me.
Yeah, and the impact of that no bid is probably even more so than that horse goes for $300,000. Now, you mentioned 2 minutes in the ring. So we're going to the sale on Wednesday. You guys, with the outs and everything else, it looks like you're going to sell about 120 head. On Thursday, you're going to sell about 15 or 16 head.
Right.
That's a big difference. How do you transition mentally to doing that kind of sale?
Well, the biggest thing is that the thoroughbred folks and most everybody in the thoroughbred business is very auction savvy. They go to sales all over the country, and as you know, so many people are absolute professionals at this, and they are very good at their job, and they sort of know where they're going before they, you know, they have a range of value that they're going to try to stick to, and sometimes they go over it, and that's my job to help them go over it. But with the sport horse, it's a little more of an emotional decision. It's not really based on business, maybe as much as it might be on someone that says, "Wow, that is a great horse. I just have to have it," because they're really not going to go out there and make money with it and try to win the Derby and try to stand the horse later down the road. It's really more about the ego. So we have to stroke the ego, and we have to let that take its course.
You know, I always tell from a bit Scott.
One of the reasons it takes so long, and not to interrupt you, is we have the sport horses out in the ring behind us doing their thing, whether they be a dressage horse or a saddlebred or a jumper. They're out in the ring behind us jumping a course. So that takes some time.
No, and it's a great presentation. Has to be tough for the bid spotters, right? Because they're coming with you from Wednesday night sale, where a guy is maybe touching his ear to make a bid, and you're at the sport horse sale, and people are waving carrots. So
that's exactly right.
So it's a different game. Tom, I'm going to let you go. It was a pleasure talking with you. I'd like to get you back on the show for a longer period of time, and maybe you can explain what you guys do to get ready for a sale.
Well, that would be great. And again, I'm honored to talk to you anytime. And thanks for a great show. And I will look forward to seeing you on Wednesday night, I hope.
Yes, sir. You will see me. I'll be waving at you, but maybe not.
We'll sell you a horse. Great.
Okay. Good deal, Tom. Thank you so much. And we'll see you here on Friday.
Thank you.
On Wednesday, rather. Thank you. Bye-bye.
OBS March, the two-year-old source for three-year-old stakes winners. Ella Reeves stamped himself as a leading Kentucky Derby contender with a pair of dominant graded stakes victories. Favorable outcome was a determined winner of the Grade 3 Swell Stakes, and Iliad was a convincing winner of the Grade 2 San Vicente. Find your next stakes winner at the OBS Selected 2-Year-Old Sale March 14th and 15th. The under-tax shows are March 9th through 11th. OBS, we measure success by performance.
They are superstar athletes, but they don't ask for more money or go on strike. They bring their best every time they play. They are great thoroughbreds, retired at Old Friends.
And here's commentator turning for home in the Whitney with a three-length lead. And here's commentator to win the Whitney again. And boy, he did it with some front-running style today.
All commentator wants is a peppermint and to hang out with a couple of his pals, like Eclipse Award winners Hidden Lake and Sunshine Forever. Or even a Breeders' Cup champ.
Prize the surging Sierra Roberto toward the inside. A driving finish in the turn. And here's the wire. And it is prized.
Many of the past superstars of our sport are still running around. So come visit them at Old Friends in Georgetown, Kentucky. Or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
time we offer to you a filly by Bel Esprit, out as Helsinge by Desert Sun. First foal of a half, sister of that wonderful sprinter in Magnus. Didn't he run a great race in the Oakley Plate the other day? And, of course, the filly now is also out of a half, sister to the brilliant Blue Diamond Prelude winner, the outstanding two-year-old this season in Willander. Lovely family, continues to improve. This is just one of those black-type families that just keeps producing stakes winner after stakes winner. Great family, and by a sire doing a great job in Bel Esprit. 100,000 for her, 100, 100 a starter, 80, 80 to go, 80 or 50 surely, 50. Well, you tell me. I'm just here to add up. You're the judges. 40 to go. 30, all right. I got 30 on her. I got 30 down. I better get 30. I better get 30. Take it down. 40's better. 40 there. I got 40 there. 50 there. I got 50 down. I better get 50 him up and down. I got 50 on her. I have 50 down. I better get 50 him up and down. This great filly family. I got 50,000. 60, 70 there. 70's here, Mark. I got 70 on the left. Jimmy with you. I got 80,000, 80 there, 80,000 and 90 on her. I got 80,000, I got 80 a bit, I got 80,000, but 80 there, 90 there, 90 there, 100 there, 100 a bit, now 10, 100 there, I got 100 now, 10 on her, I got 100 a bit, 100,000 now, great family, 10, 110, 110 a bit. 110,000 now, 20, 120, 120 there, 120 now, I got 120 in the good judge, 30, 130, 130 now, 40, I got 130,000 a bid, I got 130, 130 a bid, 130 again, 40, same place, 140, 50, clears the air, 150 there, 150 a bid, think of the residual value of this filly, the end of her racing days, what a pedigree she's got. I got 150. That's after she's won a Group 1 for you. I got 150. 150,000 now. 150 a bid on the left. 60. 160 there. 160 a bid. I got 160,000. I got 170. 170. 170 there. 170. 170. Pete, your turn. 170 now. I have 170,000. I got 170 a bid. At $170,000, I sell her once. 80. 180. Now 200. I got 180. 200. I got 200. Thank you. I got 200. But I got 200. But I got two bid. I got 200. Do I hear it? 10. 210. 210. 210 a bid. Now 20. I got 210. I got 210,000 now. 210. At $210,000 that I sell her. 20 if you like. At 210. Done. Well done.
This is Les Salzman from Equisport Radio, and we're glad that you can join us today.
Great to be here, Les. Nice to talk to you.
Now, Mark Webster is the managing director of William English & Son. They're the equivalent of our Keeneland in the Australian market. And, Mark, you guys are celebrating 150 years of selling horses, huh?
Yeah, that's right, Les. We've been operating for 150 years here in Sydney. We also operate in Melbourne as well, and that we're certainly the longest operating auctioneering firms in the world, probably behind Tattersall's in the UK.
Yeah, and you know, most Americans, you know, we know a little bit about Australian racing because of Great Black Caviar and some of the other great horses that you've had in recent years. And you folks sold Black Caviar as a yearling, right?
That's right. Yeah, we sold Black Caviar at our sale in Melbourne for $210,000. And, yeah, what an incredible filly and race mare she became, winning 25 out of 25. Incredible strike rate. And
now, you're coming up to your yearling sales right now, am I correct?
That's right. We've just had our first yearling sale of the year. We start at our budget end and build our way up. And, yeah, we've just had our first sale of the year, our classic sale. And we're moving into our sale in Melbourne, which starts this weekend. And that is a sale that's really growing in international appeal. That's a sale that Black Caviar came out of just 6 or 7 years ago. And then we have our Easter yearling sale in Sydney, which is the one that really has the worldwide reputation of being one of the best yearling sales in the world. It's like Keeneland Book One or Tattersall's Book One of that standing.
Now, one of the things that I guess, because there's so much more interest in Australian racing here in the United States than there was, let's say, 10 or 15 years ago. Matter of fact, you know, every morning you can watch racing from Australia on TVG, which is our equivalent of TAB or RSN. But people are getting more and more familiar. But one of the things that the bloodstock agents tell me is a little bit difficult is kind of figuring out the difference in age because of foaling dates. And in the international market, how does that play out for you?
Look, it's really not a problem, Les. You know, there's a six-month difference. Obviously, we breed in our spring just as the Northern Hemisphere would do in its spring. The benefit for us is that we get access to all these top stallions in their Northern Hemisphere off-season. So Australia is quite unique in that sense that we get the best from North America and Japan and Europe coming down to Australia, because Australia really is the best Southern Hemisphere breeding ground. Behind the US, it has the second biggest population of broodmares, so we're the second biggest producer behind the US, and we're just a natural market. When the horses go and compete on the global stage, it's usually when they're a little bit older, and the six-month difference really, really doesn't matter.
Exactly, especially when you get to the handicap divisions. One of the things that I noticed is the quality of mare being offered is a lot stronger than one might anticipate.
Yeah, look, again, we it's interesting here in Australia. A lot of the people who like to race and race at the highest level, they're quite happy to sell foals out of their top mares. You know, I know in the Northern Hemisphere, sometimes there's very wealthy owners like to breed and retain their best foals. But here in Australia, the market is very much different to that, where the big owners that have got the top mares, a lot of them like to sell their foals. I mean, part of it is for tax reasons, that they, you know, need to be operating an actual business, and they need to be trading, so they need to buy and sell. They just can't race and then breed necessarily for their own benefit. And so that works, you know, that works well down here. And we're lucky that we get access to some of the better mares from North America and Europe. We get a lot of mares being bought out of Keeneland and out of Tattersalls and sent down this way.
You know, there's some great, you know, looking at your upcoming book, there's some great female families. And you've got some of those bi-hemispheric stallions as well. So it's an attractive book.
Yeah, you'll find, so with our Easter sale of book one there, about 30 to 35% of the yearlings will be out of imported mares. And that's just strengthening the Australian bloodline. Obviously, you know, Australia doesn't, you know, the thoroughbreds all came from one place in Europe a couple of hundred years ago. But here in Australia, you know, it's really been the last 40 to 50 years where there's been a big focus on importing some of the best bloodlines from all over the world. And look, we also do have quite a big influence from Japan. And as you know, the Japanese are very good producers of top-grade horses. So it's good to have them involved too.
That's got to be a big plus. Now, tell me something. The exchange rate between the U.S. dollar and the Australian dollar right now, is it favorable for the Yanks to come over, or?
Yeah, look, I think if anyone is listening to this back there in the States, just think about
it. Which we hope a few people are.
Yeah, just think about a 25% discount on anything you come and buy down here. You know, the exchange rate is sort of hovering around 75 cents at the moment. So that's great buying power for anybody coming from North America. And, you know, increasingly, since everything settled down after the GFC, the last 4 to 5 years, we've been getting more and more North Americans coming down here, buying horses, but also buying farms and taking advantage of the overall breeding industry.
Well, it's a great climate for the sport. You know, I think there's a lot of enthusiasm from what I see in Australia for the industry.
Look, racing here in Australia, it's, I guess it's like American football back there for you guys, where everyone stops to watch the Super Bowl. We have the same thing here with our Melbourne Cup, which is a big race we have in Melbourne, but also a lot of other big race days around Australia. Australia, believe it or not, has more racetracks per capita than any other country in the world. And everybody loves racing. A lot of people, I would say about 30% of people have a share in a racehorse of some kind. Syndication here is huge. People like to have just 5 or 10% in a horse and go to the races with their friends and family members. So it's certainly not an elite sport here. We do have participants at the elite level, but it's also very open. You know, you could have someone we call a blue-collar worker, somebody who, you know, works hard during the day as a cleaner or a bricklayer or something like that. They go to the races on a Saturday and they compete against very wealthy individuals, and they compete comparable level. To give you an example, our Golden Slipper race here, which is a race for two-year-olds, it's worth $3.5 million Australian dollars. So that's about $2.5 million US. The favorite for that race at the moment is a filly called She Will Reign, and we sold her for $20,000 last year. And she has 20 owners in the syndicate, and they're all first-timers, and they're all what we would call working-class people. And they're just about – they're going as favorite into our biggest race for two-year-olds.
I wish I was the track photographer on the days she wins.
Wow. You know, some of the lead-up races, they've gone berserk. I can't wait to see what happens on Golden Slipper Day. She won the Silver Slipper just 3 days ago, knocking off what was the favorite for the Golden Slipper, knocked him off by about 4 lengths. So she now goes in as the favorite. But those sort of fairy tales are happening here in Australia all the time. It's quite a remarkable place.
And there's different levels of racing, too. You know, your country tracks, you know, the local guy can get a horse and run and be competitive. And I think that's great as well.
They can. You know, we here again, particularly in New South Wales, we have races for trainers in the country so that they can bring their horses into the city and compete for big stakes money. And that means that all their owners from out in the country areas, remote parts of Australia, can come along and be part of the big race days in the city. And we also have big stakes money out in the country areas. Like last weekend, there were two races out in the country, both worth $150,000 Australian dollars for, and these are lead-up races to the country championships, which are on in April here in the city. The stake money for the country championships in early April is $400,000, and that's only for horses that are trained in the country by country domiciled trainers. Quite incredible.
Good, please. No, one of the great things about that kind of situation is it gives the small owner or the small trainer a chance to catch some lightning in the bottle. And that's why a lot of people wake up in the morning.
Yeah, they do. I mean, everyone needs to feel they're achieving something. But let's face it, horse racing, there are a lot of costs involved in horse racing from the time you purchase a horse and get them trained. And you know, you're looking after vet bills and adjustment and everything else. So you need to be competing for good prize money. And here in Australia, right across the board, there's good prize money. Even if you've just got an average horse, you know, you can still, you win a couple of races, you cover all your costs, and there's a little bit of money for to go in your back pocket. And that's the good thing about racing here in Australia is, there's good prize money. Probably even better than that is that the strength of our breeding industry, Les. And I was talking the other day to Justin Cassay, who you may know there is based in Florida. He came out here for our classic sale and helped buy some ready to race or breeze up horses for one of our clients. And he's great to have him out here. But we were talking about, you know, colts that go on to be stallions. And, you know, we're just doing some comparisons. And a colt that can win a good, you know, a group one two-year-old race there in North America might make $10 million to go to stud. Here in Australia, that'd be making $20 to $40 million in that range to go to stud. The upside for the breeding industry here is quite remarkable, and that is really driving the colt market here. There's a lot of participants who want to buy colts and put them to stud. Examples would be B. Wayne Hughes there from Spendthrift Farm.
Right.
He's bought a farm out here now. We actually sold him the farm in Victoria. We sell property and horses. We sold him the farm, and he's been buying top quality colts to produce stallions, and you know, he's already on that way with graded stakes winners that he's purchased through the Easter sale. And these sort of investors realize the huge upside in the breeding barn, and then if they're good enough, then they can shuttle them back to America and cash in that way.
Now, on your classic sale a couple of weeks ago, how is that market? Because in the United States, the mid level of the market's been kind of soft. How is it for you guys?
It was really good for us. The classic sale is the sale we say is accessible to everybody. We averaged 72,000 for 600 that we offered, And that's that was up 32% on last year. The classic sale, if we just go back 3 years, was averaging 35,000. So in 3 years, we've gone from 35,000 to 72,000 for what we sort of call the entry level.
That's incredible. That's an incredible number.
Huge, huge growth at that level. You know, the we were doing 13 million 3 years ago. We did 36 million just last week for that sale in gross sales. So it just shows the stimulus at all levels here, and that'll just push on to the other sales now. And you know, we're not going to get 30% increase at the Easter yearling sale. We're coming up a much higher base, Les.
Right.
You know, that, but that's not going to happen. But I think you'll see some sort of growth. It'll be more like 5 or 10% at that very time.
And that's healthy. That's very healthy.
Yeah, and I think that's healthy. That's sort of the growth you want to see in a year. But what's happening is, I guess, the bottom of the market is sort of catching up to more close, getting closer to the top of the market, and it's sort of evening out a bit.
Now, obviously, with the strong market that you have, that's probably propelled some of the thought process for building the new facility. The company is building a $140 million facility, which I think is great because it's a place to go with the hotel and all the amenities that you're putting in there as well.
Yeah, that's right, Les. Look, we're doing something which I think is a world first, and that is we're building a new horse selling facility, but it's not being built solely for that. It's being built as a multi-purpose function and event center with a five-star hotel, which will be run by the Accor Group. They're the biggest operator of hotels here in the Asia-Pacific region. It'll be a luxury equine-themed hotel, and it'll have lots of function spaces and facilities for our clients. So the goal there is to increase our numbers. We're taking the stabling up from 600 to 830 stables, which means we can accommodate more. So our classic sale just last week, we had 600 being offered. Next year, it'll be full at 830. We had 1,700 entries for that sale, and we could only take 600. So it just goes to show the demand for people to sell and good demand to buy. And we've got to service that growing demand, particularly from Asia.
Now, what up ahead here, if we can, we'd love to revisit with you and talk about the inspection process that you guys use for your yearling sales, because that's always fascinating to our listeners. Now, one of the things Peter Fitzgerald told me, that each of the rooms in the hotel are being named after a champion that was sold by the company. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We don't have enough rooms yet for all the champions, but we, you know, this is the first tower that we're building for the hotel, and we're leaving room for another tower later. But yeah, we've got 144 rooms in this first tower, and every room will have a number, just like you'd expect in a normal hotel, but it'll also have a name in honor of one of the great champions. There'll be a Black Caviar Suite, a Maiden Power Suite, Shannon, and great horses that have competed here and also gone to America. All these horses will be celebrated in a room. They'll be decorated to celebrate those Group 1 winners. So, yeah, we think that'll be popular. It's different. Again, nobody's done that sort of thing. And we certainly know everyone's got a favorite champion out there, whether they bred it, trained it, owned it, or just admired it from the sidelines.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot, okay? It's the weekend, you're bringing the family. Which suite would you pick?
Oh, dear.
You don't have to answer that one. We'll talk about that one off the air.
Yeah, we'll talk about that off the air. We've got some quirky names that that we could talk about, like Foreplay or Procrastinate, and a whole lot of weird names. But I don't know. I think the Black Caviar Suite is going to be pretty popular.
And I guess the Foreplay for the single guys, right? Hey, Mark, it's been a pleasure visiting with you. We wish you the best of luck, and we'll be talking regularly, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, I look forward to it, Les. Thanks for that.
Great. Thanks for joining us. Take care now.
OBS March, the two-year-old source for three-year-old stakes winners. Ella Reeves stamped himself as a leading Kentucky Derby contender with a pair of dominant graded stakes victories. Favorable outcome was a determined winner of the Grade 3 Swell Stakes, and Iliad was a convincing winner of the Grade 2 San Vicente. Find your next stakes winner at the OBS Selected 2-Year-Old Sale, March 14th and 15th. The under-tax shows are March 9th through 11th. OBS, we measure success by performance.
There you go. Ask it, million 150. Million 150. Million 150. Here we go. Million one's up here. Million 150. All three. Million 150.
Well, Brett Colt, take a look at the Colt to the ring. He's by Giants Causeway. He's out of an unbridled song mare. He's a half brother to a grade one winner. He's a half brother to a top European Colt and an outstanding breeze. 10-1. As they say, he certainly ticks all the boxes.
Now, Pete, just to confirm, million 550? Thank you. Million 6. 550. Million 6. Here we go. 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 Six. Now 7. Million 7. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. 1-6. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. 7. Saw. Million 7. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. 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 Million 7. Here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Million 7. Million 7. Saw. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Million 7. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Million 7. Here we go. Here we go. Now 7. Million 6. 50. Million 6 up here on the phone. Million 650. All three. Million 650. Here we go. Million 650. Is he done? He done. Can't see. Million 650. All three. Giving them million 6. Here we go. Is he done? Million 6. Here we go. Here we go. 50. Here we go. Here we go. Thank you. Million 6. Million 650. Anybody else? You want in here? Million 650. I have. Sold it right here. Million 6. Go on the phone with Ryan. 1,600,000. Hold your flies just for a second, folks. Yes, go ahead.
All right, now, what was this incredible pause for Northwest and outstanding Tesco Colt by Giants Causeway?
Well, Todd, I was going to play Beyonce as your intro music, but I thought this would be more better music for your ears.
Much better music, and I certainly don't want to embarrass myself by dancing while on the phone. So,
you know, actually, that was what we were planning, that you'd do a little two-step and we'd be able to video that. But, okay, with that in mind, by the way, Todd Wojciechowski is an old, old friend. Well, I'm old. He's not. Todd and I go back about 35 years when he was just a pup getting
just
ready to go to school.
Not-nosed kid running around the backside at Atlantic City.
Exactly. Matter of fact, the great thing about – first of all, he comes from probably two of the finest people in the horse industry. Butch and Casey are just great people. And I, you know, adore both of them. Good horsemen and real good people, and did a great job raising you in spite of all the challenges you tried to give them.
That's right.
But Todd was about 17, 18 years old when I was stabled on the backside. And the great thing about having Todd around was when they brought those kicked-in bales of alfalfa that I couldn't lift up, Todd was there to carry him to the feed room for me. So big, strong guy, but a very bright guy. And, Todd, it's great to see you landing at OBS.
Well, thank you, Les. It's certainly I've enjoyed being here and enjoy working in the auction setting. You know, like you said, I've been around the industry practically my entire life fortunate to – I've probably seen the industry from just about every position, whether it's at the racetrack or in the auction world. And settling in here, it's nice to be able to use all that experience and work here at OBS.
Well, I think that's so important when somebody in the auction company, you know, has a feel for what goes on in the barn every hour, you know, and how things change. And especially, you know, you've got this great 2-year-old sale coming up in a couple of weeks. And, you know, for those folks, and we were talking to Tom Biederman a little while ago, those 2 minutes in the ring, that can mean the whole year. You know, and the sales company needs to be aware of what those folks need.
That's absolutely correct, Les. You know, there's a lot of pressure and a lot riding on those 2 minutes, and not just that, it's also riding on their under-tack show performance and how they look on the racetrack. I mean, for any of your audience that's not familiar with the two-year-old sales, we're really the NFL combine for the thoroughbred race horse industry. The two-year-old sales where those horses actually perform on the racetrack and demonstrate their ability to run. I was just talking with someone about that earlier today, of having the experience on the other side of the desk does give me a great insight and a level of empathy with the consigners and the sellers of horses.
Yeah, and it's so important. You know, and again, we talked about this with Tom. OBS and the guys in the box, you know, and I've known most of those guys, you know, for years and years, from Ryan to the Martins, they work hard on every horse. And that's so important, you know, that a consigner feels like they got a fair shake when that horse came out of the ring.
Absolutely. Those guys do a great job. I mean, you know, Ryan's crew has been with us, you know, since the inception of OBS some 25 years ago. You know, it's good. They also know the consigners. The consigners have a good rapport with them. There's a communication level there, and that always helps.
You know, when you were talking about the combine concept, you know, and these two-year-olds, you know, for a lot of them, this is their first exposure to the real world. And one of the things that I've noticed over the last few years, especially since you folks changed the track surface there, it's a lot more forgiving for these young horses that are going their first or second or third, eighth or quarter than a harder racetrack. And I think a good place for somebody to buy a horse out of.
Well, I agree with you. You know, we've had the synthetic surface in for probably about not going on 10 years now. And for whatever anyone's opinion is on synthetics as far as racetracks, for our purposes, it has served us well. One, because of its kindness to these younger horses. And I think these kind of go hand in hand, as you well know, Les, that one of the tricks or dangers of a racetrack is inconsistencies and having it one way one day and one way the next. And what this our surface allows us to do is provide as fair as possible surface over the entire time of the breeze show, whether that's day to day or whether that's intraday from 8 in the morning till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We're a little different than a lot of other sales companies in that we sell a lot of horses, a lot of two-year-olds. We sell more two-year-olds than any other sales company in the world. Our upcoming March sale, there'll be 677 horses cataloged. In April, we'll have 1,200-plus, and in June, we'll be bumping up around 1,200. So there's an extended period of time under which these horses are breezing, whether it's in March we'll breeze over 3 days, in April and June we'll breeze over 6 days. And it is a task to try to keep that track as fair and equitable as possible so that every horse gets a fair opportunity to display their ability. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, you first.
Inside the day, you know, it's certainly in April and June, it gets a little warm down here in Florida. And, you know, you start off the morning, particularly in March, it can be challenging. You start off a morning at 50 degrees, and by 1 or 2 o'clock, it might be 80. The sun gets in there, and if you're dealing with a dirt track, you have all kinds of variables, you know, getting loose, getting dry, needing water. And the way the breeze shows are set up, we can't dump enough water on it in between sets in order to affect any change or to keep it in a manner that way. And then also we're apt to get a rainstorm every once in a while. And in the past when we've had dirt tracks, you've had one day of the breeze show be on a sloppy track and the next day be on a fast track. So the synthetic surface takes away a lot of that.
And I think, as you said, you know, it's kinder on the horses. I know if I'm a buyer, I don't need to walk into the barn the next morning and see those bumps on the shins, you know, and I think that kind of surface is good. Now, you talked about this catalog, and maybe you can explain how a catalog is put together, because this year you're selling, what, 677 or six, something like that?
Right.
But the last three or four horses are going to make people sit in their seat. But that
Absolutely.
Wasn't by design.
No, it's not. Some people think that. Some people think that we place horses in specific locations in the catalog, and that's not the case, nor any sales company. It is simply alphabetical by dam. There's a rotating letter that will skip so many letters or this or that from year to year or from sale to sale. And it then, once we land on a letter, it is simply alphabetical by dam. So to take the conspiracy theorists out of that, we don't place horses in the catalog in specific places for situations. It is strictly, as far as strictly alphabetical by dam. As far as the horses that go into the catalog, a couple years ago we opened up our March sale. Our March sale used to be a totally selected session whereby we went through and selected horses. A few years ago we opened up March to include horses that maybe didn't have quite as much pedigree as some of the blue bloods, but still were athletic individuals that people would be interested in. The idea was the select sales, the catalogs and kind of gotten too small, and you have buyers that don't have enough horses to spread out over and to select from when you're in one of those ultra select sessions. So we felt like opening it up and giving buyers an opportunity to see more horses to choose from would be beneficial. And quite frankly, the level of expertise in buying at sales anymore, they don't need a sales company to tell them what select. They'll determine what select.
That's very true. And I think by you changing the format, you've broadened the buyer pool as well.
By all means. We've had some horses that were purchased for modest sums that have gone on and become graded stakes winners. And just by opening up that sale, and you know, it is the case. Not all, you never know where a good one's going to come from. And so we wanted to broaden that buyer base. We wanted those guys to feel confident that there was a horse here that they could afford at different price levels, but also trying to make sure that they're still quality athletes.
Now, you guys have done a lot of alterations to the facility. Can you tell me a little bit about it?
Sure. We started a renovation process probably right after our August yearling sale. It's going to be a pretty significant renovation once it's complete. People that haven't been to our facility in a little while are going to be impressed with the scope, the size and scope of the project. We are certainly not done, but we have the facility usable by all means and have some really nice plans in place for really bringing our facility up to a 21st century look.
Cool. Any difference in the barn area, or?
Well, we're always working on our barn area. There's no additional barns or anything like that. Last year, we have aside from our 1 mile track that's synthetic, we also have a dirt training track on our property. Last year, we expanded that from 3/8 to 5/8 of a mile. So that was a major upgrade that people use for training while they're here. And then, you know, we're constantly trying to upgrade barns, paint, and make sure that they're looking as best they can.
Now, you changed your calendar around a little bit as well. Can you talk about that?
Yes, we actually have moved our yearling sale from August to October. That will take place this year for the first time. Originally, there was a mixed sale in that October slot. What we have seen with the mixed sales is that January had kind of cannibalized a lot of October. October had gotten a lot smaller, and it seems as though in the overall sales calendar has pushed later. You see a lot of later sales now becoming bigger. So the October sale was awfully early for weanlings.
and you start seeing those horses moving to those January sales. So we kind of did the same thing with our August sale. You know, we've had, you know, concerns over the years of moving August to October, but it will be a much kinder scenario, I believe. It'll give those horses an opportunity to mature even more. It'll take us out of probably the hottest month of the year here in Ocala, and be a little kinder on the buyers and the people that are working the sale. And I think it'll give us an opportunity to grow our yearling catalog.
Well, you know, it makes perfect sense. You know, back in the day when Keeneland had their July sale, it was such a rush to get a yearling ready. And, you know, consigners had to force the horse to get to the ring. And I think, you know, when you can push back from July and August to October or so, it gives the horse a little bit more chance to develop. And also, as a buyer, you get to see a little clearer picture of what you're buying.
Absolutely. And you know, in addition, I think, a number of years ago, the general consensus was nobody had money left to buy horses after September. That's proven to be false. There's plenty of horses that are bought after September. So I think with all of that, taking all that into consideration, this is going to be a really good move for us.
Good. And your closing date for your yearling sales?
May 1st.
Okay, so folks have plenty of time for that. Tell me a little bit about this upcoming sale. Have you had a chance to look at the book?
Well, I have, and we've got a stellar lineup of, you know, as far as sires of horses, it's a who's who. Our select sale or our March sale and our April sale have really grown in prominence, and the one good thing is that consigners aren't afraid to bring any type of horse, the highest quality horse they have. They're not afraid to bring it to March or April because they know that there's going to be that they can get as much for that horse as they can anywhere else. So that has and it has been proven out over the last few years. And so it's a who's who of the sire roster. It's mind-boggling.
And it seems like your consigner list is kind of spread out a little bit.
Yes, absolutely. You see some new consigners coming in, some new bright horsemen that have come in and have done well over the last couple of years. They've grown. You see new people coming in. Of course, you have a lot of the consigners that have been here for a number of years here at OBS. And, like an Ocala stud, they've been doing the same thing for how many years, and they're still successful.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting to watch a group like that and how they've transitioned. And some of the other consigners, you know, and the technology that they're using in marketing their horses. You know, one of the things in the horse business, you can teach an old dog new tricks, and you better be ready to learn. And I see that a lot, particularly at the OBS sales.
Well, absolutely. And you see a lot of it. I think that's being introduced by the younger generation. And the older generations that are savvy are paying attention and employing it as well. Whether it's, you know, moving the catalog to the, you know, we do a lot with video. Our Bray shows are all available. They're available on an iPad. They're available on site on kiosk, on demand kiosk. They're streamed on YouTube. So you're right. I mean, technology has certainly crept into our industry. I think it's taken a little while for people to figure out how to apply technology, but also, you know, because buying a horse is such a touchy-feely situation, and how to add technology to that, but people have figured it out, and they're doing it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think you could always do that with mares because, you know, a mare is a mare. But with the younger horses, you do have to touch and feel, but you're seeing a lot of good video coming out, and a lot of good reporting as far as information is concerned.
And, you know, the analogy of the NFL Combine is really appropriate because, just like you said, the amount of data and information that is out there on these horses, whether you have people measuring stride length, you have people measuring heart capacity and lung capacity, you have people using their eye. I mean, someone asked me the other day, do you measure, you know, mechanically measure horses? And I said, we all do, to some respect. We're doing it with our eye. We may not be quantitating or quantifying that number, but we're all measuring them with our eye. It's kind of interesting and fun to watch to see how all these different variables and pieces and measures come together to settle on specific horses.
Yeah, back when we first met, we never thought that there'd be cybermetrics for horses.
No, I don't believe so.
You know, we were just trying to figure out where the hay oats and water goes. But
that's exactly right.
But it's great to watch, and it's for an older guy, it's exciting to see these young guys come up with the technology. And you know, a lot of people say there's no good horsemen left, but you look at some of these young guys, and they're using the technology with some great basic horsemanship, and the product's pretty darn good.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's selling them short by saying that they're not quality horsemen. They may be using different techniques and different tools, but they're nonetheless, the proof is in the pudding and in the winning the races. And that's the one great thing about racing. There's no way to fool anybody there. There's a horse at the end of that race that sticks his nose across the line first.
Yeah, and that's the great thing about our business. There's definition to victory. You know,
absolutely.
Todd, we're running out of time. It has been a pleasure, my friend. Hope to have you on the show regularly. We'll see you in 2 weeks up on the sales grounds. And
great.
Say hello to the folks for me.
I certainly will, and anytime I'll be willing to come back anytime, Les.
Thanks, Todd.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps up this edition of Sales Ring Confidential. We hope you enjoyed it and are very pleased that you were part of the show. Next week, a very, very special show. Leroy Jolly, Jack Van Berg talking about how it was growing up in the business. So for Equisport Media, this is Les Salzman thanking you again.
Here's Bearcat. Here they come, spinning out of the turn. Dancers, Bearcat puts a head in front. TK Skipper fights back down along the rail, and they slug it out. TK Skipper has the lead along the rail. Dancers, Bearcat, second. Freight Saver to the outside in third. Kurtz first, down along the rail, fourth. Down the stretch, inside the furlong marker. TK Skipper about to win another. Freight Saver on the outside, then along the rail, Rare Storm. But it's TK Skipper again. Another fine performance. TK Skipper by 2.5. Freight Saver second, Rare Storm third.